The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out at ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Tonight's guest is going to be Claude Werner of Firearm Safety Training, LLC. And I'm going to get into why that's actually really cool for everybody in a second. Just kind of a concept I wanted to talk about. You know, if I could make everyone carry a full-size service pistol and choose what caliber they carried and get them to carry, quotation marks, enough gun, I would. But I really think that's kind of disingenuous of me to do that, because, you know, what works for me is not going to work for everyone. And, you know, there's a lot of interest lately in small, for lack of a better term, sub-caliber pistols, things that are under 389 millimeter. And, you know, the reason why Claude is cool, well, there are multiple reasons why Claude is cool, but the one we are going to be discussing this evening is the work he's done with pocket pistols, specifically, you know, the sub-service caliber ones. His effectiveness at running them, just a lot of the research that he's done as well, I think everyone's going to be really interested in. It's not going to be, you know, a Tales from the Black Helicopter type show tonight, though he could tell those stories if he wanted to. But it's going to be, I'm going to try and focus in a little bit more on what everyone around here is probably dealing with. So, anyway, co-hosting with me tonight, Mr. Jim Beatty, Andy Ulrich. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Hey, John, always good to be here.
I'm always glad to have you here. Andy, how are you doing?
Really good.
Wow. You just...
Who could top that?
No, I couldn't. I really wish everyone could hear the conversations before the microphones get turned on. I'm trying not to laugh every single night. So anyway, why are pocket pistols frowned upon by a lot of the upper echelon trainers? A lot of trainers, but, you know, I'm going to leave out the middle to lower level trainers, that not that their opinions are wrong, but they don't necessarily have the experience to be driving the rest of the industry. I'm talking about, you know, the Tom Givens and the Dave Spaulding's and the Craig Douglas's and, you know, those guys. And I'm not speaking for any of them, but I just wanted to, the tier that I'm talking about, you see a lot of emphasis placed on minimum caliber, minimum size, minimum capacity. And I kind of wanted to examine why that is. I'm going to talk about why I don't like pocket pistols for probably the first part of the show. And then we'll talk to Claude and he can tell everyone why I'm not exactly right. So, and, you know, one of them is the caliber limitations, 22s, 25s, 32s. The performance is not necessarily there compared to larger calibers. Would you say that's accurate, Jim?
I would agree, and I would go beyond, you know, your common definition of performance as stopping power. Let's talk about reliability. I mean, a rim fire as opposed to a center fire primed cartridge, you know, your 22 long rifle, for example. I mean, you've got just such a greater chance of a misfire or a non-fire.
Right.
Think about all the times you've shot a pistol and how many times your 22 has went click.
Right, exactly. You know, that's one reason. Obviously, if you need your gun, a click instead of a bang is probably a really, really bad feeling. I've not gotten to experience that one, thank God, or whomever.
It just becomes a really expensive club, or in the case of most of these pocket pistols, an inexpensive club.
Yeah, well, whatever. You know, you've got capacity and going back to stopping power, that's a different show entirely. I will say this, that if you shoot anyone in the right place, they tend to stop what they're doing. But is everyone capable of doing that under stress on demand? I'm probably not, and I spend a lot of time doing this. A lot of other guys probably not as well. Some are. It just really depends. But ignoring that fact, you know, you've got capacity limitations, whereas if you've got multiple attackers and you only have six rounds, well, okay, that could be a problem. You hear the term inaccurate floated a lot as far as these guns are not accurate. Well, that's not exactly true. Now, there is a difference between mechanical accuracy, which is mechanically what the pistol is capable of, and practical accuracy. Mm-hmm. You know, like a 38 J-frame. A lot of people say, oh, those are, you know, belly guns. You shove them up under somebody's ribs, you pull mm-hmm. the trigger until it clicks. Well, yeah, they're good at that. I've shot them out to 75 yards, and I'm not a good revolver shot at all. Some days I am, some days I'm not. But, I mean, you can do it if you are practicing the proper technique, have a good sighting system. You know, it really depends. But mechanically, they're capable of it.
Sure.
Now, practically, with a short sight radius and maybe a heavy long trigger that not everyone tends to master, and the big one, really poor sights on most small guns, yeah, okay, it's easy to miss with those.
How about a grip that you can get a single finger on?
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of the small, I've got a relatively large hand, so some of the small guns is a one and a half finger affair. I mean, even if it's two, while it is the two fingers that you're doing most of your grip strength with anyway, it's still not ideal. You know, the recoil can cause a flinch.
Sure.
There's all sorts of, and obviously the answer to that is training. And I'm not saying it's not. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about with Claude. But, you know, I think everyone will admit that they're not as easy to shoot as a larger pistol. I think that we can all agree on that.
Seems reasonable.
Yeah. I try very hard to be reasonable. Now, one thing I will give them, if convenience is going to determine whether or not you carry a gun, they're hard to beat. And that's something that I think gets lost in the mix. I don't have a problem carrying a larger firearm because I've invested in good gear to do it, and it's important to me that I carry a larger firearm, so hey, no big deal for me. But if you are concerned about all sorts of different things, and the small gun is the only one that you're going to reliably carry, that's where the pocket pistols come in, and that's, you know, huge. You know, rule number one of a gunfight, don't get in a gunfight. Rule number two of a gunfight, have a gun. Well, obviously the gun you have with you sure beats the gun that you leave at home because it was uncomfortable or you were just running out. And, you know, I'm not going to discount that either. It's just, that's kind of the sides of the issue that I see them as. Obviously everyone's going to have different points of view, and that's fine. And when you get your own radio show, you can bring those up. But as of right now, that's kind of where I'm at the... I'm kidding. I kid. I love all of you and appreciate you listening.
Liar.
No, never. Anyway, we're going to talk with Claude Werner about pocket guns, their efficacy, just all that stuff. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Steve Perrin, Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Right now, we've got Mr. Claude Werner holding on the line. I'm going to try and get him on right about now. Claude, are you there?
I am.
Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on the show this evening. I really, really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure to be here.
So I'm just going to jump right in. Do you mind telling the listeners a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into the issues at hand?
Well, I actually have kind of a dual background in that I spent a long time in the Army. I was a Special Forces team commander and a military intelligence officer and an infantry company commander. And then eventually, when I got out, I got into the commercial real estate business, and I was the research director for three commercial real estate firms and eventually became the national director of real estate research for the accounting firm of Deloitte & Touche. So, you know, I balanced those two things, those two very diverse backgrounds in what I train and the way I look at things.
Right.
So, and that definitely colors the way I look at it, because I think I've spent a lot more time, probably more time than any of my contemporary training colleagues, in the white-collar environment.
Right.
And I think that's pretty important in the context of the everyday person's life.
Well, and it seems like, too, that that's something that gets lost sight of is, you know, I wear jeans and a T-shirt pretty much everywhere I go. I'm covered in tattoos, and I don't really try to, you know, dress up unless I've got somewhere I'm going. It's easy for me to carry a gun. Well, that's not the same for, you know, someone that has to wear a suit and tie every day of their lives.
Exactly.
So, and I know that we talked about this a little bit before the show, but I wanted to cover it because I think that you get a lot of unfair attention based off of the amount of time you spend teaching the small guns. You're not saying that they're the best choice all the time. That's not your position.
No, not at all. I freely admit that my bedside gun is a Beretta Vertec with a 20-round magazine and a light and a laser and night sights, and that's what I want.
Right.
You know, when size is not an issue, I absolutely think that, you know, you gain a lot more, in, at least in terms of reliability. You know, the term powerful handgun to me is an oxymoron, and like you say, we won't go into that right now.
I was thinking,
you know,
that was kind of like
military intelligence.
Yeah.
Wow. It's, you know, and I was told this, and I will clean this up for the airwaves, but handguns are good for poking holes in things, and rifles are good for tearing things up, and I omitted several phrases that make that better. But anyway,
my idea of a powerful small arm kind of starts at a belt-fed GPMG.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it moves up to a 25-millimeter autocannon.
Yeah.
Then you're starting to talk about power.
Exactly.
You know, anything pathetic pop gun that you can hold in one hand and
not
fire
so
it, it's not powerful. That's
right.
All.
And that's, you know, and we'll get into that another show.
Exactly.
But I wanted to cover that because, you know, obviously I've run into... I think we travel in the same circles at this point, and I hear a lot of interesting things, and I see a lot of the arguments that you have, and I think a lot of people are missing out on that small little fact. You're not saying that it's the best choice. You're just saying that it's better than nothing, and a lot of times nothing is the only other option.
Exactly, and that's my biggest beef with the training community is that there's so much stress on the full-size service pistol, two spare magazines, a flashlight, and a partridge in a pear tree,
mm-hmm.
that what you end up having is, especially in the case of smaller statured people, they just cannot carry that mm-hmm. kind of equipment with them on a daily basis. They just can't do it. Sorry, guys. You know, get over it. So, as you mentioned earlier in the show, you know, one of the prime rules in a gunfight is have a gun.
Yeah.
You know, so if we do things that discourage people from having guns, then, you know, how responsible is that, is my question to the rest of the community.
Well, and that's interesting you bring that up. Do you think that a lot of times the decision that someone makes to carry or not carry is based off of the idea that if you're going to carry, you're going to carry a certain thing? I mean, do you think that in a roundabout way we sometimes encourage people to not carry a gun by encouraging them to carry the right gun?
Yes, and I know you're going to have William April on the show in a few weeks.
Yep.
And you should, one of the questions you might ask William is his concept of that's not me.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave it at that because he can address the issue much better than I can. But he told me about that, and it immediately resonated with me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. But I try not to take away time from everyone's shows,
sure.
So
sure.
I want to give you the full treatment here. Do you think that, and going back to this, so we're saying that sometimes a small gun is what we are going to carry based off of multiple reasons. And I guess you hear the term non-permissive environment, and a lot of people assume that that is a legal thing. Well, I'm not supposed to carry a gun here. That's a non-permissive environment. Do you actually find that to be the case anymore? Or?
Well, you know, that's... That attitude is a holdover from, I don't know, pre-1986, when it was much more difficult to get a license to carry a pistol. Nowadays, one of our prime non-permissive environments is the social rather than the legal. For instance, Somebody's going to a birthday party, and, you know, there's a story that you and I had talked about this earlier.
And we'll get to that one later. But, yeah, like a birthday party.
Or something like that. And they say, well, I don't want to carry a gun to a birthday party. And it's not because they don't want to carry a gun. It's because they don't want other people at the party to look at them sideways and say, what are you, weird? Why did you bring a gun to the birthday party? Well, it's not the birthday party that we're worried about. It's getting to and from the birthday party that's the important part. And so if we discourage people from having their gun, well, you know, that's a problem, in
right.
my opinion.
Yeah, and that...
So that's, that aspect of the social NPE is much more important now than it used to be, and I think that sometimes we lose sight of that.
Yeah, it was definitely something that I hadn't completely thought out. So going in a roundabout way, sort of back to that, if we are trying to avoid getting made, for lack of a better term, and mm-hmm. and we've decided to carry a small gun. Now, I know a lot of folks, you see like 5-shot J-frame 38 calibers, you see 380s, specifically lock breech 380s, which for those that don't care about gun nerd stuff, tend to recoil more than some other actions. You see small 9mm. The problem with those, they're not friendly to some people. Is that
oh, absolutely. And I've had this discussion on the range sometimes, and especially with ladies, it's a problem where the husband picks out the gun for her, and he, you know, he'll buy her an LCP or something like that. And, you know, that's one reason why the LCP is one of the most popular guns in the country right now.
Right.
You know, you have to look at the BATF figures to figure that out. And then the woman will bring it to the range, and, you know, and she'll fire 2 shots or maybe 3, and she goes, this hurts me. And, you know, so this goes back to this thing that you and I were talking about of, should a man buy his wife's shoes? Probably not.
Right.
And similarly, should he then buy her something that is just as personal to her as her shoes, which is a gun? Because if it's painful for her, she's not going to want to shoot it.
Right.
And I think, you know, so that goes to that.
And that's not even a female issue either. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't particularly.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't particularly like getting smacked in the hand with a baseball bat, which is what some of the small guns feel like.
That's absolutely true. They're painful. You know, even those of us who shoot a lot will say, you know, that's about a 30-round practice gun, and I'm done. And,
yeah.
and I'm not just done with that gun. I'm done for the day because now my hand hurts.
Right.
How many of those guns do we have in our gun safes at the house? Quite a few.
Yeah.
A few.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, most folks. I mean, and that's just something that you run into. Now, going back to it, that's not to say that a female can't carry a firearm and shoot it effectively. Everyone's obviously different, and it's a case-by-case thing. But
sure, absolutely.
Something that I found interesting was, and I know this sounds simple, and I know that I'm not the only person that said it, and I'm not even original in bringing it up, but a miss with a more effective caliber does not beat a hit with a suboptimal caliber.
The number of incidents that I can demonstrate to you
mm-hmm.
where, you know, a small caliber, there's a dichotomy in the training community. We talk about that things take place, you know, 3 shots, 3 seconds, 3 yards, or, you know, the 0 to 5 foot figure from the FBI that's commonly parroted, which is completely misinterpreted.
Right.
But so we say that, and then we go, but they're hard to hit with. Well, you know, come on. At 5 feet, how hard is it to hit with anything?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not. And so then what you end up with is, you know, the small handgun that a person can shoot well and so therefore is confident with allows them to make that hit. And when I did my study about 10 years ago of the armed citizen, frankly, I was shocked when I came across, when I ran my numbers, and at that time, the data was better, frankly, than what it is now because of the copyright laws.
Right.
22s and 25s had a 30% one-shot instant lethality.
Hmm.
And I admit, I was shocked by that. I just hadn't expected it at all. And in other words, that means that with a 22 at, you know, somewhat beyond arm's length, the defender would shoot the aggressor, the criminal, with one shot with a 22, and the criminal would drop dead on the spot.
Right.
30% of the time.
Well, and that's not to say that, and that goes back to the whole shot placement thing. It's not necessarily an indictment on other calibers or a ringing endorsement for those calibers, but placement is key with anything. And if you are better able to, if due to your limitations or your situation, you're better able to place accurate hits with a 22 or a 25, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
And I think that a lot of folks, and... You know, I'm a fan of Gary Roberts' work. For those that don't know, he does a lot of ballistics testing for a lot of different people. He would argue, rightfully so, that the 22 is a ineffective round, but it's kind of like Claude just said, you know, if you shoot someone in the right place with anything, and if you are accurate and confident with your gun, that's what's important. Now, we're going to talk about that a little bit more. Claude, if you don't mind holding... when we get back, we'll talk with you a little bit about that and also criminal surveillance, why that affects that, us and how we notice it. But right now, everyone's listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
News that affects you at the top and bottom of the hour. 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. So right now we're talking to Claude Werner from Firearm Safety Training, LLC. No one on the line right now, so you can call us at 749-5500, or if you're out of the area, 1-800-823-8255. We'll try and get to your calls at the end of the evening if you have any questions, comments, whichever. We're talking about pocket guns, but honestly, I'll talk to pretty much anyone. So anyway, Claude, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Excellent. So we were talking about pocket guns and caliber selection and all that. I want to get into avoiding crimes in the first place and sort of how that works. But just real quick, and I think that this is a disconnect that occurs, and I'm stealing this idea from you, but I'll let you expound on it. There's a difference between a civilian gun use versus a police or military gun use?
Absolutely. You know, and in the... You know, in the military, we use the acronym METTC, you know, which is basically just what's your mission,
right.
and expounding on that. And one of the things that I think sometimes we lose sight in the training community is the fact that the police mission is to close with and capture the criminal. And that puts the criminal in the position of being a cornered rat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and we say that, and it commonly understood, cornered rats fight.
Right.
On the other hand, a private citizen's mission, you know, your mission, my mission, is simply to force a break in contact of the criminal activity.
Right.
And so what that does is that puts the criminal in a position of being able to withdraw.
Yeah.
And no criminal goes out in the morning and says, gee, I hope I get into a gunfight with a private citizen today.
Right.
You know, what they're looking for is essentially someone who is unable to fight back, that they can pull their predation on. And when it becomes obvious, and I say this from personal experience because I've had it happen to me 12 times as a private citizen, that when they realize the predation has gone south, they look at their watch and they go, oh, look at the time. I have to go now.
Right. And that's what tends to happen in the typical situation. Now, obviously, if you're one of the people that gets struck by lightning, you don't sit to yourself and say, oh, I got struck by lightning. This is really odd. You're forced to deal with this situation. But 9 times out of 10, that's what you see. Is once.
That's right. Exactly.
Right. And we could have an entirely different show about what is good enough. That's something that goes around and around with all the people that talk about this. What is good enough? And the answer is you don't know until you do it or don't do it. But anyway, like I said, different show.
Right.
So back to what we should be talking about at this point. Criminal surveillance. Can you talk about that real quick?
Well, one of the things that I've observed, and actually, you know, many of my colleagues observe it too, but they don't emphasize it enough, in my opinion, is the concept of staying out of trouble as opposed to getting out of trouble.
Right.
And one of the things that criminals do is they conduct surveillance looking for targets of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that people need to be aware of, because there's any number of incidents that are easily cited. You know, you and I had talked about the Pettit family murders up in Connecticut,
right,
where the criminals essentially picked up on Mrs. Pettit and her daughter at a grocery store and followed her home, and then, you know, decided, oh, this is a good target, and came back, and it was a heinous crime.
Right. For those who are not familiar, that was the doctor in Connecticut. His wife and daughters were raped and murdered. They set the house on fire. He was beaten pretty badly, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Managed to escape. You know, that's something terrible. And
yeah, it was a horrible crime. And many crimes like that are preventable if the people who were subject to that surveillance just had a little bit of awareness. And this doesn't have to be, you know, a CIA, FBI, DEA kind of, you know, operation, because, frankly, you know, there's a big difference between surveillance detection and what's called counter-surveillance.
That would be where like, you sweep for bugs and things like that.
Well, or sometimes, in especially in terms of cars, counter-surveillance is very aggressive, and it tends to be violent, and for the most part tends to be illegal unless it's conducted by the authorities.
Right.
So private citizens don't want to go there. Really what they need to do is just be aware of their surroundings. And you know, I use a thing called a checkpoint concept, where I just say, you know, you're going to turn three corners, and if you turn three corners and you see the same car behind you, don't let that car follow you into your driveway.
Right.
As long as you're in your car, they're not going to try and run you off the road or things like that. You know, that's not the way economic predators work. So as long as you just don't stop in any place where they can then gain the upper hand on you, you're pretty safe. And if you drive to a hospital or a fire station, I don't generally advocate driving to police stations.
They're empty.
Because frankly, yeah, that's right. Most police stations now are not manned all the time. So unless you live in a very big city like New York or Chicago,
right,
the likelihood, you know, here in Atlanta, the zone headquarters near me, I went there one time to report a traffic accident, and it was padlocked,
yeah,
which surprised me. So that idea of just being aware of when you might be surveilled, and it's not necessarily the idea of that they have picked you out as a person.
And sometimes they do, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah,
I just try and get this in here since we're starting to get a little long on this one. But just with the types of criminal surveillance, you've run into three kinds as far as targeted, rolling, and opportunistic. Okay. Targeted being, now we had Tom Givens on, and he talked about a shopkeeper he had where the wife ended up having to shoot a guy off of him that was trying to rob him. They had specifically targeted him because of what he did?
Exactly. Okay. He was a shopkeeper. They knew he had cash, and they were waiting for him to come out.
Right. Now, you were talking earlier about a birthday party and not wanting to carry a gun there. Chuck Haggard, who's been on the show as well, he reported an incident where I guess it was two women coming back from a birthday party, and guys hopped out of a van, and one of the women ended up dead. Well, she had a concealed carry permit, but had left her gun at home.
Exactly.
Because
very sad.
And it is, because she didn't want to carry to a birthday party, didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And then, like, you were brought them up already, the Petit family murders, opportunistic. The wrong people saw the right people at the wrong moment, and just it kind of went from there. And I guess your position is that picking up on that early puts you at a much more advantageous
point? That's right. Then you're in a position of not having to deal with it by using a countervailing form of violence.
Right.
Just the idea that you maintain your awareness, don't let a situation get too bad. And one of the things that I try to do in my training classes is tell people, get the family members involved.
Yeah.
You know, the wife and your children. You can actually, at some point, use your children as essentially a security element for you. You know, and just say, I want you to be aware of this and that. And obviously, there's a training. You know, and when I say training, that doesn't necessarily mean come to training with Tom or myself, but just teaching your children, watch out for bad people when we're around.
Right, right. And that's, that kind of goes back into the whole whether or not people accept that something bad can happen to them.
Which is a whole different discussion.
Right. And also, too, and I want to be clear on this, you're not, obviously there are certain situations where whether or not we notice them, we can't do very much about avoiding a conflict. Sometimes they just find us, right?
Absolutely. But I think what is important for the average person to understand is that criminals don't think the way we do. You know, they're not, they don't have the thought pattern of, I'm going to go someplace, I'm going to do something useful, and then I'm going to come back home.
Yeah. And
you know, what criminals do is they're wandering around, you know, essentially looking for trouble.
Right.
And if you happen to come within their radar, then, well, you're that trouble.
Exactly. And, I mean, that's something we'll be getting into with William April when he's on, actually. But it's time for another commercial. We've got one person holding on the line. But if you would like to talk to us, give us a call at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-TALK, T-A-L-K. Claude and I will be answering your questions after the break. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. We got a couple of folks holding on the line, but if you would like to get in and have a question for us, 749-5500, 1-800-823-8255. So right now we have Claude on the line. Claude, you're still there, right?
Still here.
Excellent. Claude does a lot of – very well-known trainer, does a lot of work with pocket pistols, other things too, but I'd say that a lot of people know you for that, wouldn't you say, Claude?
Yeah, I'm probably known as the snubby god.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably what I'm best known for is my work with a snub-nose revolver.
I will say I am jealous of the fact that you shoot a snub-nose revolver better than I shoot my full-size service pistol. it actually depresses me a lot, but maybe one day. Anyway... we've got a couple callers right now, Claude. We've got, do you mind taking a call or two?
Oh, absolutely.
And we'll see what we see. We've got David from St. Bernard. David, are you there?
Yes, sir. I enjoy your show very much. I have two quick questions
sure.
for you. First question, my mom is older. She just had arm surgery. She's 76. She can't shoot a regular handgun anymore, so I got her up. Well, I've had it. I bred a Neos 22,
okay.
And I put hollow points in it and 10 rounds, so she's not going to have to reload. But what's your thoughts on a 22 long rifle with hollow points? I mean,
well,
they're going to go down if you put 10 shots in.
I
know it's not a 44, but...
I wouldn't make absolute statements as far as what will or will not happen when you shoot someone, but...
Correct.
You've kind of answered your own question there, just because if that's the only thing she can shoot, then that's the only thing
okay.
she can shoot. I don't know about hollow points necessarily, but Claude, do you have a thought on hollow points or just round nose lead in a 22?
Well, actually, one of your co-hosts earlier, John, had mentioned the issue of ignition reliability.
That actually is a good point.
And that's the criterion that I use in choosing ammunition. Now, if you look at what small bore rifle shooters, what they choose, they are fanatical about, because they're shooting you know, in competition against a fixed time limit that they have so many shots to fire. So the ammunition that they choose is not the bulk ammunition that, you know, you buy at Walmart. And so what I tell people is search for premium quality ammunition online.
Right.
Now, you know, you might pay, so you end up paying $5 for a box of 50 of it. Let's say the one that I use the most is Federal Premium High Velocity Target. So it's a little more expensive.
Right.
How does that compare with center fire ammunition? It's still pretty cheap, but
the quality control is much higher than standard.
It's much higher. You know, the small bore shooters will go through 5,000 rounds of that without an ignition failure.
Yeah, and that's actually something I hadn't considered. So that's actually
so
probably.
For David, I would say get the best quality ammo you have, and that's your criterion as opposed to whether it's hollow points or not, you know, because you're just punching a hole in the guy.
Right. What's okay. Your other question, David?
My other question, I normally carry a Smith & Wesson S or Plus P. I think it's a 642, the hammerless, the airweight, or I carry a 44 Special. But honestly, they're just too much. They're too big to carry. I wear shorts in the summer, you know, with a golf shirt. And looking at a 380 LCP, or I really don't care what brand, but one of the gun shops I went to said, well, you know, if they're wearing a leather coat and a heavy sweater in the wintertime, you know, you're probably not going to have much luck. And I'm like, well, will you go put a leather coat on for me and let me shoot you? It's like, I guess that comes down. I guess the big question is the ammo, too. And since you're a small bore or a small gun expert, is a 380 big enough?
I have no problem with carrying a 380, David. And once again, what I think is the important thing is its functional reliability in your pistol. Now, John had mentioned earlier the fact that, and he's absolutely right, that in some cases, small pistols are simply not as reliable as a larger pistol. But in many cases, what I find is that's a balance of the gun and the ammunition. So you may find that a small pistol might shoot one kind of ammo well, and another, you might have, you know, malfunctions or whatever. Okay. Well, then obviously the malfunctioning ammo is not what you want. You can practice with it, but that's not your carry ammo. So once again, it's your reliability that becomes the criterion, not, you know, the bullet performance.
Right, and something else too. I'll get into just real quick, David. When you hear about problems with 380, or you'll hear the FBI standards brought up, which, without getting into a lot of detail, is a criteria that a bullet is supposed to meet to be suitable for law enforcement duty use. Now, all the rounds that I like will pass that standard. The problem with 380, for some folks, is that the hollow points they make for 380 will not penetrate deeply enough if they expand.
Okay.
And if they don't expand, they act just like full metal jacket. Now, obviously, bullets do weird things all the time, and I'm not saying 100% for certain what's going to happen. But personally, when I've carried a 380, and everyone's got different priorities and different modes of dress, so I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying when I've done it, it's been more as a backup gun. But when I've done it, I've carried full metal jacket. Generally, I like the Winchester white box because it's got a flat front. And if that will feed better, if that will feed in your gun, that as opposed to having a round profile, that flat profile will cut tissue a little bit more adequately. Once again, it's at the end of the day, having the gun is the important part. Would I like to see you carrying a double stack 9mm? Of course. You know, but just you got the right idea, just having something with you. So
can you tell me, it's not a high-end gun, I know, but the LCP, I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, better brands. Is that a decent gun?
I mean, for what it is, it's perfect. If yours works well, that's all you need. I like the SIG 238 a little bit better just because of it recoils less and it's got very usable sights.
I haven't bought one yet, so I'm still looking.
Yeah, well, the thing I'll say is the SIG's twice as expensive. And whether or not it's better is just, you know.
Okay.
And you're going to have to put a little more effort into learning to run it.
Yeah,
just a little bit. It's a 1911 type platform.
Yeah, it's not a pull and play sort of thing. But David, I appreciate you calling
in
tonight.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Okay, bye.
Bye. So, yeah, anyway, that was David from St. Bernard. So, any more thoughts on that, Claude? I mean, as far as...
I agree with what you said about the idea of if you're going to use a full metal jacketed bullet, having that front, which is called the meplat,
mm-hmm.
Just it tends to crush tissue a little bit more than a pure round nose. And so I think that's a good recommendation on your part.
Oh, well, thank you. It's nice when people agree with me. It doesn't happen all the time. But
not here. No, not
with these two sitting across from me. But the other thing, too, and it's interesting, obviously we brought up the Ruger LCP. There are other brands that I don't necessarily care for, and I'm not going to call them out on air, but they might have a reputation for not working very well. If you get a copy, though, that works for you and is reliable, that's really all that matters, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
And that seems to be something else that a lot of people lose sight of. I will fully admit that I'm a gun snob, but I'm carrying around $1,200 worth of pistol on my belt, too, which is, frankly, unnecessary. It is. I could do pretty much the exact same thing with a $400 or $500 Glock.
The gold inlays on the recoil spring. I don't see it, John.
Please.
The Blaster 3000.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's something, too, that people lose sight of. So you travel around and do training, right, Claude?
I do.
What do you have coming up next? Do you know off the top of your head?
I'm on hiatus for the summer, just because it's so hot in a lot of areas of the country. But really what I've been focusing on a lot of is what I call distance training.
Okay.
In other words, trying to produce training products for people that, let's say like David. How likely is it that he'll be able to come to a class that I offer, as opposed to if I can give him a practice program to use when he goes to the range, that goes a long way, and I've been experimenting with that, so I've put some training products up on my website, www.snubdvd.com. That I'm hoping that I can get people to at least have a plan when they go to the range.
Right, right.
As opposed to one of the things that I see people do is...
I'm actually going to cut you off, Claude, just because we ran out of time already.
Okay.
What's your website one more time, fast?
www.snubdvd.com.
Thanks so much for coming on tonight, Claude. Next week, we're going to be talking to internationally known firearms and self-defense instructor Masad Ayoub. Everyone should have heard of him. It's going to be a really great show. Make sure you check us out on ballisticradio.com and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week at 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.